Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 20, 2015. 4 civilians were killed and 8 others injured in Melut as heavy fighting between South Sudan's warring parties continues in Upper Nile State.
Melut is still under our control 100%. But for the Poloid, we did not capture Poloid. We are killing each other from a distance. So it will take some time for forces to get engaged in a real combat.
And a human rights group says South Sudan government operatives are detaining civilians for up to 10 months at a time without charging them.
We also found a large group of detainees who are still in the National Security Service and others who have been released. And again, the same thing, very long detention without any charges, without any access to justice.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar say they have captured one of South Sudan's biggest oil hubs in Upper Nile State. The military spokesman for Machar's SPLM-IN opposition, Colonel Lon Ngundeng, says his forces captured Faluj on Tuesday evening. Ngundeng claims all of the oil fields in Faluj area are now under the control of the SPLM-IN opposition.
They have crushed Phnom Diit and Siangrial up to Melut. Then from there, they reached up to Faluj and Adar. We have taken over the oil fields.
How many oil fields are there in the areas that you have taken?
There are quite a number of oil fields. But the main fields that are producing today, in Faluj, we have already captured all of them, and we are in charge of the whole Faluj and Adar area. All of them have dispersed to Blue Nile, the government forces.
What are you going to do with these oil fields?
That is a good question, my friend. But this is a strategic victory, my friend, because where does Juba get its supply of arms and ammunition and economic strength? They get it from this area. Therefore, capturing this area means, of course, Juba is collapsing.
But the people, the common people on the streets, will be the ones feeling the pinch of this collapse. Is that the objective of your movement?
So the government of Juba was relying on its arms and its strength, and he refused the peace dialogue we have done in Addis Ababa, and that is the choice they made for themselves. If they had been underrated by the victory of the SPLA-IO, that is not our problem. But our hope is that that government will be overtaken and retransformed again, so that the people of South Sudan, the common people you are talking about, will at least come to a sustainable government.
The government spokesperson in Juba, Michael Makui, and then the military spokesperson, Colonel Philip Aguer, have gone on record saying you are receiving support from Sudan. That is why you are very active these days. How do you react to that accusation?
This one is not true. The government in Juba has no might to fight. Because they have no might to fight, they went and brought the rebel movements of Darfur, the Blue Nile rebels, and Ugandans, including other foreigners. They use these mercenaries in order to fight us. Now they are using accusations that we are being supported from the north or from the west. If we had been supported from the north, we would have taken over Juba in 21 days.
Where are the staff working in the oil fields, especially Faluj? Faluj has a lot of foreign workers. Where are they?
They had been transferred to Juba by the government.
Have you shut down the oil fields? Are they operational?
They have closed it when they were running away. So we have nothing to do with them now. It is a political issue that our leadership will sit down and have to make in the days to come. That is not our concern as an army.
Khartoum depends on fee they collect from transferring the oil from South Sudan to its refineries in Port Sudan. You say you are in control of oil fields there. This is definitely going to affect the economy of Sudan. Are you in contact with Khartoum on these developments?
That is also a political issue. It has to relate to our leadership. Yeah, our leadership knows what to do and how to do it. We in the army, our work is that we have to depose the forces and take over the place and make sure that it is secured. What I know so far is that the installations are safe, the place is so safe, and there is no any destruction that had affected the installation.
That's Lony Ngundeng, SPLM in opposition military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makui is denying the rebels' claim that they control the strategic oil facilities at Fallujah. Makui says government forces are in control of the oil fields in Upper Nile State.
That is not correct. They are not even in Malut. Malut is now in full control, or is in the hands of the government. And if Malut is in the hands of the government, how will they move to Fallujah at a time when they are footing? They attempted to Malut last night, and the fighting continued throughout the night, and this morning they were repulsed from Malut. Fallujah area, Malut area, is fully in the hands of the government.
Makui also dismissed claims by forces loyal to renegade SPLA commander Olen Johnson that they captured the Upper Nile State capital, Malakal, from South Sudan Army last week. He says fighting is still going on around the town.
For Malakal situation, the fighting is still going on in the suburbs of Malakal, and we will soon know what the final result.
South Sudan's military and security operatives are illegally detaining dozens of civilians accused of supporting rebels for several months, and some are being tortured, according to a new report released by Human Rights Watch. Human rights researcher Sky Wheeler tells South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam most of these civilians are not charged with a crime and their whereabouts are often unknown to family members.
We looked at both detentions by the military, specifically the MI, the military intelligence wing of the South Sudanese army, who have been, you know, arresting and detaining people for political reasons, basically, and holding them for a very long time without charges. We also found a large group of detainees who are still in the National Security Service and others who have been released. And again, the same thing, very long detentions without any charges, without any access to justice. And often these people really, you know, they don't know what's going to happen to them. Their family members have no idea because there's no clarity over exactly why they're detained.
Can you give me an exact kind of example of when you say these are political detentions? What have they done? And then the National Security Service comes along and picks them up.
It appears that the people who have been detained are basically annoyed a governor. We have both cases where, you know, a former governor of Northern Borno Gezal, who is now the SPLA chief of staff, a very powerful individual, you know, ordered the detention for two politicians, and one of them was then in detention for about 3 months without any charges. And in another case, the Lake State governor ordered the detention of two MPs who didn't do what he wanted them to do. And they were detained now for well over about nine months now. And they haven't had any charges, and for many months the family members couldn't find them.
What specific examples can you give me why these people are detained? What have they done? Is there rumors going around that they have aligned themselves with the rebels? Is that what's going on?
People who are associated with individuals who have now joined the opposition forces. For example, there's a large group of individuals who were arrested and detained from Central Equatoria who have a connection to Alfred Gore Lado, who joined the opposition forces last year. In the case of Nimele, I documented about 11 cases of long and sometimes quite brutal detentions of individuals who are accused of supporting, you know, providing food for, money for, they're accused, they're providing guns for a man called Martin Kegi, who is from there, and who also joined the opposition. So quite often it seems that it's people who have some kind of connection, maybe just an ethnic connection, that from the same tribe or from the same area, and they go into these long detention periods without any charges. What should happen is that they should either be charged with a crime that is known in South Sudan, a recognizable crime, or released.
Does it seem to you that these National Security Service type operatives are acting independently, or are they getting directives from the central government?
It's really it's unclear, I think, why exactly they choose to arrest certain people and when. It's all very mysterious. The National Security has been operating in South Sudan for many years now. and especially since South Sudan's independence in 2011 and the years since, have become an increasingly repressive force in South Sudan. They've detained a lot of journalists. They've shut down newspapers. They've seized whole runs of newspapers. And they really have quite a big impact on freedom of expression in South Sudan, a very negative impact.
And with these long-term detentions, are many, if not most, of the people that are being held, their whereabouts unknown to their family members, or do they usually get to go and at least visit them?
Quite often, family members do know where they are, but it often takes them a long time to find out. And there's often a lot of unclarity at the beginning. You know, people just, security forces turn up at people's houses, take them away in military vehicles. Sometimes the family members have to spend quite a lot of time finding them.
That's Human Rights Watch researcher for Sudan and South Sudan, Sky Wheeler, speaking with Carol Van Damme from Nairobi earlier today. We go back for the latest in the fighting in Malakal. The spokesman for Orange Forces in Upper Nile State is also denying the SPLM in opposition's claim that its forces have taken control of the oil fields near Fallujah. Brigadier General Nyagwal Ajak says forces loyal to Orange captured the oil area of Melut last night. Melut is around 82 kilometers west of Fallujah.
What is happening is that we are close to Fallujah because we captured Melut yesterday at 7 p.m. Now we are facing each other in Fallujah, but the real combat has not started. But we are chilling each other. The enemy is responding, and we are chilling each other.
So you're telling me you are not in control of Melut? We are not in control of Fallujah?
No.
And how important is Melut town that you are saying you have captured yesterday?
Melut town is very important because if you capture Melut, Melut will endanger Fallujah immediately. Because the area of Tangreal and so on, these are some of the beginning of the oil field.
And how many oil fields are there in Melut County?
You have got Tangreal, you have got Adar, and you have got the other one in Fallujah.
So is Tangreal and Adar under your control right now?
It is the Tangreal that we captured. The gunboat is in Tangreal. So we left the Tangreal, is about 1 hour and a half distance. Then we went to Melut, we captured Melut. So we went to Koradar, we crossed, and then now we are facing each other, very close to each other in Fallujah. So we are chilling each other now.
Military authorities in Juba were saying yesterday that what happened in Melut was a tactical withdrawal, and they managed to push your forces out of Melut today.
It is a big lie. You know, the American attempt did not take even half an hour. They ran away. It's important to tell the fact, because when you tell the truth, it still will be confirmed that you are lying. So the most important thing is that Melut is still under our control 100%. But for the Fallujah, we did not capture Fallujah. We are chilling each other from a distance. So it will take some time for forces to get engaged in a real combat where people can see themselves.
That's Brigadier General Nyagwal Ajak, spokesman for forces loyal to Renegade SPLA Commander Johnson Oloñ. He was speaking with me from a known location in Upper Nile. The United Nations mission in South Sudan has condemned the recent upsurge in fighting, which it says has direct impact on UN operations in Melut town. UNMISS says two mortar bombs landed in the UNMISS compound and the protection of civilian sites in Melut yesterday evening. UNMISS says four civilians, including a woman and a child, were killed and eight others severely wounded in the attack. The head of UNMISS, Helen Margaret Loy, called on warring parties to respect the sanctity of UN installations and staff so that the United Nations can continue to provide assistance and protection to civilians who once again have to flee fighting in South Sudan. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, for the first time, World Teaching Hospital begins providing meals to patients. Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think it's important to know how to swim?
It's very important, of course, because, and for example, for our case here, maybe sometime you can be forced to go to the river. And if you cannot swim, you can just die there. But if possible, you know how to swim, you can just rescue your life. That is why it is very important.
Very much important, because As far as I know, it reduces weight and it's not good to be so fat.
Yeah, it's important because that person makes physicals. That person is... Okay, it even reduces on the body weakness. Like even these diseases, because when you swim, at least you are physically fit.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. WAO Teaching Hospital in Western Bahr al-Ghazal State is now providing 3 meals a day for its patients. In the past, families of patients had to bring meals to their loved ones. As Dimo Silva Auralio reports for VOA from WAO, state authorities have realized the benefits of hiring an outside company to do the job.
The Kuch Company for Trading and Supply was contracted by Western Bahr al-Ghazal state officials to provide meals for hospital patients. Funding for the meals was approved to the hospital through a donation from the International Medical Corps, or IMC, which already provides medicine, water, doctors, and cleaning services to assist the hospital. Authorities believe nutritional support will reduce the number of patients who leave the hospital before completing their treatment. No meals have been provided at the hospital since it opened in the 1980s. For many patients, the meals come as a welcome surprise since it did not appear to be a priority in the past. Angelina Balta's baby boy was admitted to WAO Teaching Hospital for malaria on Tuesday. She says her child was served rice and liver, and this made her very happy, especially since food prices have skyrocketed in recent weeks.
If the baby cannot eat, the mother needs to eat in order to breastfeed. Their food is very delicious, like a home-cooked meal. I appreciate the company and the hospital administration because some of us come from villages far away and have no money for buying medicine, let alone providing meals for the patient.
Dr. Bakit Mawen is the WAO Teaching Hospital Director General. He says patients need special diets to boost their recovery and that the Kuch Company's intervention is needed.
Honestly, the issue of food is one of the priorities in the hospital. Most people, especially foreigners, are surprised when they come to the hospital and we tell them food is not there. I want the company to provide food, and if they are distributing meals, they should provide a special diet for those who have been operated on.
Abraham Chol is a Kuch Company manager. He hopes hospital administrators are able to continue the services beyond the original one-year contract. Chol says they will ensure that every patient has access to the 3 meals a day. He says nurses in charge of the wards at WAO Teaching Hospital must identify the dietary requirements of each patient and adjust meal choices as needed.
The ministry has given us the contract to provide meals for patients, and we have started with tea. Lunch and supper will not be effective if there is no cooperation with those at the wards.
WAO Teaching Hospital has never approved meals for patients since South Sudan gained independence. The institution was called WAO Civil Hospital before independence, but was transformed to a teaching hospital in 2005. Before independence, MSF provided food, but only for child patients at the hospital. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio reporting in WAO.
South Sudan's rebels came under criticism at a meeting of regional leaders at the Great Lakes International Conference in Luanda, Angola. As Lucy Pony reports for VOA from Juba, President Kiir attended the meeting and returned to Juba yesterday.
As Mr. Kiir arrived at Juba International Airport, the minister in the office of the president, Awan Gold Riak, told reporters gathered at the airport that conference attendees adopted the following resolutions.
One, condemnation of the rebels and their leader, Dr. Riek Machar, for being intransigent and reneging from the previous agreements. Two, the conference affirms the sovereignty and legitimacy of the government of South Sudan, led by President Salva Kiir Mayardit. Three, the conference also urges the historical African liberation movements that are ANC of South Africa, NRM of Uganda, and CCM of Tanzania to convene a meeting to bring the factions of the SPLM in a meeting before June. And this will have to update on the status of the implementation of the reunification of the SPLM that was signed in Arusha.
Gual says that at the meeting, all factions of the SPLM, including the SPLM in opposition, will be brought up to date about the status of implementing the reunification of the party as agreed to in Arusha. Once that happens, all resolutions will be reported back to the International Conference of the Great Lakes region. Gual says if the rebels do not negotiate in good faith,
there will be consequences that they will be called negative forces and they have to be dealt with accordingly.
John Luke, the spokesman for the former SPLM detainees, says the resolution on implementing the Arusha agreement is a step in the right direction. He says during their most recent meeting in Pretoria, South Africa last week, two main issues remained unaddressed. Luke says one is security, which he says was agreed to in the roadmap, including the protection of civilians. Luke says the other is the issue of revocation or dismissal of cadres from SPLM membership or from the leadership positions within the party. He says both issues were discussed in Pretoria and that participants were assured by the guarantors that those matters will eventually be handled. The Pretoria meeting was convened by the South African ruling ANC, or African National Congress, and Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi Party. Gual says participants agreed that sanctions on South Sudan would not be helpful.
The conference rejected the sanctions on South Sudan, whether targeted sanctions or arms embargo. Also, the conference supported the continuation of Troika countries at the status of observer, not to be involved directly in the mediation peace talks in Addis Ababa.
Leaders at the Angola summit also discussed the deteriorating security situation in Burundi and resolved to encourage the indefinite postponement of elections there to ensure that they are free and fair. Along with President Kiir, the summit's participants included the heads of state of Angola, Burundi, Central African Republic, Republic of Congo, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Zambia. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Juba.
The National Alliance of Opposition Political Parties in South Sudan have added their voice to the growing chorus that the economy of the country is at the brink of collapse. Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Opposition leader Lam Akol chairs the opposition umbrella group. He says the fact that the prices of basic goods goes up every day is just one sign that the economy is ailing. Akol estimates the prices of most commodities have risen by 400% since last month. Another symptom is the dollar exchange rate. Just last week, $1 was selling for 15 South Sudanese pounds on the black market in Juba. It has dropped back to 9 South Sudanese pounds to the dollar, but that is still far from the official central bank exchange rate of 2.96 pounds to the dollar. Akol says the National Alliance of Opposition Political Parties has looked long and hard at South Sudan's economy.
We have diagnosed the problem. We are proposing the solution. If this is followed, then we may save the economy. If not, then, of course, there's nothing you can do.
Among the steps the alliance suggested to stop the economic meltdown are unifying the black market and official exchange rates for the U.S. dollar, imposing strict regulations for issuing letters of credit or LCs, and injecting more dollars into the market. Akol says these steps would help to control runaway inflation. The alliance says that a big part of the problem is that President Salva Kiir's administration has been diverting government revenues that should have been used for development projects to pay for the 17-month-old conflict that is devastating the country. At least 40% of South Sudan's annual budget is allocated to the security sector this year. The alliance also noted that South Sudan's debt has ballooned to $10 billion. Much of that money is loans that were secured against the oil and were supposed to be used to strengthen the economy. But with the oil production down by nearly half since the start of the conflict in December 2013, the government has had difficulty repaying some of the loans. That means it is unable to secure any more loans because lenders have lost confidence in its ability to pay them back. President Kiir's spokesman, Attorney Wek Attorney, dismissed the alliance accusations that poor governance by the government is behind the deteriorating economy.
They should have realized that it is because the country is in war, and it has come, it has also coincided with the global drop in the prices of oil. This is not a making of the government of President Salva Kiir.
Still, a report released last month by the Stockholm International Peace Research, or SIPRI, shows that South Sudan's military spending increased from $982 million to $1.08 billion in 2014, making the new nation the biggest military spender in the region. But statistics and analysis can't help the average South Sudanese, who is struggling day by day as the war continues and the economic situation worsens. Rajab Muhandis is a working-class resident of Juba. He says the souring economy is draining his pocket and his spirits.
Getting the basic items in town, it's very difficult. Water is scarce and quite expensive now. Prices of goods have gone high. Besides, there's also this problem with getting fuel now. Almost all the petrol stations are dry, and so getting fuel to move to the office and there are different locations in town is totally difficult. And so this economic crisis really is costing us a lot.
Like many other South Sudanese, Muhandis had to make deep cuts in his family's budget and lifestyle.
I have cut down in my movements to colleagues and family members. I've cut down even in the amount of food and everything else that we consume in the family. And these are all kind of attempts to ensure that we're able to survive.
Akol says most working-class South Sudanese are in the same boat as Muhandis. Akol says the government needs to adopt austerity measures to reduce government's spending to a minimum and be transparent when it negotiates loans if it is going to try to fix the problem. Muhandis agrees but adds what is probably the key to resolving the economic malaise in South Sudan.
So the first step is to address the conflict, end the fighting, and then get back to start working on the various other issues, setting up the governance system, and then moving from there to address the economic crisis and putting in place the necessary infrastructure to be able to boost economic activities in the country.
But ending the conflict has not proven to be an easy task. 16 months of peace negotiations led by regional bloc IGAD stalled in early March when talks that were built as the last chance to bring peace to South Sudan ended without a deal between Mr. Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Since then, fighting has picked up sharply in Unity and Upper Nile, the two states where South Sudan produces the oil that is supposed to be the backbone of its economy. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
This is marking the end of our show for this Wednesday, and we'll leave you with a song, Ceasefire by Kebaz featuring Young Bo.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep. Gazeta Duban, Junu Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kan Mashin, Leki Dam, Shusha Bab Bimud, Yal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Mofof Kaman, Kuli Yomahal Bika, Mama Bikore, we want peace.
We've been listening to Kibas with Young Bo and the song Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. We hope you tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We all need civil war. Believe higher. No for civil war.
for peace and justice.
We need peace.
Poverty on my chest, the blood sheds. My desire right now.